Hello, hello, hello. You guys are so cute and nice, and I've heard so many things about you from multiple people, that you are an exceptional group this year, Baruch Hashem. And I only wish that I could be there for Shabbos and Kol Chava Shachar this week. Before you even come for your first Shabbos in Kol Chava Shachar, I'm already inviting you for your second Shabbos in Kol Chava Shachar to me. Then we'll get to know each other, Be'ezrat Hashem. The year is young. It's all how you look at it. I grew up in Binghamton, New York. Anyone going to University of Binghamton? Good. So, grew up to a non-religious family. And by the time I was 12 years old, NCSY had come to town. And when I went to that first... Oh, here, good. Call it a vote. Thank you. On that first Shabbaton that came to our community, I was hooked. Became from Shabbos, Kashrus, the whole thing. And it was very much to the credit of NCSY that I was able to stay from throughout my high school years, throughout my public school years. And when the most important influence in your life is Rav Yamin and his dear, joyous wife, it's not so hard to stay strong in public school. And it was clear that I was going off to Eretz Yisrael for the year. There weren't too many choices at the time, and my skill level was like really pathetic. So had a Shalomim for Women existed, I never would have gotten in. Anyway, you guys are holding on a way higher level than I was, but I chose Sharfman's. And Sharfman's was amazing. Partially because I really just needed a base medrash and some great rabbis to answer my questions, and I was gonna fly. And you know how it is. The more you start to learn and get into the groove, the more you realize you don't know and you need to learn. And I was clearly a candidate for Shana Bet. I wanted it so badly, I was like dying for it. And I literally spent half the Shana Aleph year campaigning to my parents, my dear parents, my dear non-religious parents who had a hard enough time letting me go for Shana Aleph because they were afraid they were going to lose me. You know, you hear stories about people who actually stay in Israel. And my relationship was really very strong with them. I didn't want to cause them aggravation, but I wanted this badly. And so I walked around the streets of Yerushalayim with my video cameras, interviewing people, doing all kinds of crazy things. And I wrote long letters to my parents. I got myself accepted to Midmo, Shana Bet, because at that point I was in the base medrash enough, the first half of the year, that I was able to build my skills up enough to be accepted to Midmo. That's where I would have liked to be. Hashkafically, it was more along what I was looking for. And I had convinced myself that, of course, my parents would agree to this. You know, transfer the credits, push off Stern a little bit, everything's going to be the Seder. And I set myself up for a very great disappointment because the answer was a big fat no. And young lady, you're going to Stern in the fall and there's nothing to talk about. So the pshara was that I could stay that summer in Eretz Yisrael after Shana Aleph on the condition that I would go to Hebrew University Ulpan. Because after all, how absurd is it that you spend a whole year in Eretz Yisrael when you don't learn a word of Hebrew? I understood that. That's fine. I mean, I was busy learning Rashi and those kinds of Hebrew. But so I enrolled in the Hebrew University, and I had to now try and shtup in what would have been Shana Bet into this measly little summer. And luckily, in Eretz Yisrael, there's no lack of opportunities. So I did, you know, manage to live by a Reverend Rebbetzin, and I, you know, took classes in Neve and tried to maximize every moment, and it really was a wonderful experience. Shana Bet it was not, but it was okay. And with that ammunition and chizuk that I got from that little summer in Israel, I went off to Stern in the fall and basically majored in NCSY. My heart really was not in the Limudim. Stern is unbelievable. Can't think of a better place to be. New York in general, awesome. But I really wanted to be in Eretz Yisrael. And I was running around, you know, every Shabbos, you know, with Michelle El-Male and Darren Nepel and, you know, the whole gang, and we were going, and we were doing Kirov, and we were going to NCSY Shabbatons and college campuses, and there was Torah tours, and no lack of what to do. And it came time to start thinking about dating and marriage. And I thought that I would want one of those YU smicha guys over there. And we would move to small town America. I'm a Binghamton girl. I do small towns. And he'd be the rabbi, I'd be the youth director, whatever I'd find for myself. And then when my future children would be of chinuchable age, or so I thought, 6, 7 years old, then you pick up, move to Israel, and live out the dream. Well, it's only now that I'm a mother that I realize how off I was. Because it's really when those babies are cooking in the oven that they're really starting to develop. So by the time they are 6, 7 years old, these kids are fully developed, and trying to uproot them is not a simple thing. Anyone who has ever moved hometowns knows that it's not a simple thing to uproot kids. Of course, when you're younger, it is better than when you're older. Of course, there are lots of people who really do have their calling and need to be in America for many years before they come to Eretz Yisrael. But I know myself, and I know that I definitely would still be stuck there today, because I'd be too caught up in whatever project I was involved in. And my future husband, Avi, challenged me on that first date. And he said, why can't you fulfill all your kiruv dreams and goals in Eretz Yisrael? Are there not enough non-religious people in Israel that you can't get your hands on? Why does it have to be small town America? And I said, well, I'm a small town girl. Like, I really understand the mentality, and I feel like this could be where my calling is. This is where my kofot lie. But I went home that night from the date, and I said, you know, he's right. It's not like I'm going to be tied down to medical school or paying back debts. I really am free to go. Let's do it. And we decided to get married. We had a nice, big, fancy American atrium wedding in Muncie. And day after Shavuot Brachos, we got on the plane, moved to Kochav HaShachar, where we are ever since, 23 years later, 10 kids later, B'liayin Hara, Hodu Hashem Ki Tov, big time, big time, big time. We love our life. And it's wonderful. When we first got to Eretz Yisrael, I was working in a seminary called Mechlelet Esther. Alava Shalom, it's fallen apart since. It's a big shame because it was an awesome place. But one of my main responsibilities there was Shabbos placement. So I was getting these girls every Shabbos to all these interesting chavayot. And through that job, I was accumulating many great connections around Eretz Yisrael. And then after 5 years, that kiruv bug, that bug that, you know, caused me to want to be in Israel in the first place, returned. And I would see all these birthright groups passing by, and I was thinking, I have nothing to do with those people. I'm like plotting. Every time I was at the kotel and I'd see them, I'd be like, ah, I'm busy, you know, in the seminary bubble talking about tznius all day, which is very important and very good, but it was time to move on. And I thought to myself, who can get me into the into the real heart of it? And I remembered hearing the name Jeff Seidel. He's the guy who stands in the bars and at the kotel and in the university campuses saying, you're Jewish, need a place for Shabbos. And I was a Shabbos lady, and it was awesome, because at that point, you know, I loved setting people up for Shabbos. I get a real thrill out of making the connections between people and hearing about what happens afterwards. And I was accumulating in that job so many great connections geared towards the non-from. So by the time we gave birth to our little twinsy babies, Moshe and Aaron, Ima had changed one too many diapers, and I was really ready for a little outlet. Let's just say. I was looking for something very part-time, something cute and sweet I could do while holding them and burping them, and something clearly from the home. So I went on a little date with my husband, and we pulled out the old list that we've had. It's an accumulated list of basically dreams and goals that we have for Klal Yisrael since our engagement. And we came across the item on the list that says, set up Urine Israel Kids for Shabbos. It really was a no-brainer. I had the connections. I loved doing it. Everyone else in the world who works in the seminary who gets stuck with Shabbos placement and hates it and dreads it. And it's something that I felt was unique to me. And we decided, let's go for it. This will be wonderful. If we can take all the many connections that we have and help all these Year in Israel kids connect to the in Eretz Yisrael, wow. Now why? Why did we think this was so important? Because when I came to Israel in Sharfman's, I came with two connections. I had a Rabbi Groner in Ramot. He was my Binghamton rabbi, who had a very open house for me to come to whenever I want, and I did go a lot. And my cousin on Kibbutz Tirat Zvi. So those two places were where I went. And because of my lack of connections on all the other Shabbases, what can I say? I did not gain. The most important time of the week, when we have to lenatek from all of this and just do cheshbon nefesh and think and do what we came to Eretz Yisrael to do, to think about life, I wasn't really doing, because I was like hanging out with my friend's grandmother and Javier, you know, very nice, but, and my friends who did have the good connections would come back so charged up on Motzei Shabbos, and they would say, wow, we just went to the coolest yeshuv, you know, I'm like, what's a yeshuv? We saw a family, we saw a marriage, we saw kids interact, we want to do that, we don't want to do that, it was great, it started them thinking. And so we put little babies, Moshe and Aaron, on the floor every morning. We would make ourselves a cup of coffee and some breakfast. And Avi and I started creating this organization anywhere in Israel. And each morning, we would come up with a different aspect and policy. We were taking our time with it. We were doing it at our pace. And we had to figure out, where are my volunteers going to come from? I need spies in every community to make sure, you know, kashrus is good, cleanliness is good, you know, shalom bayis is good, all these basic things. And we need to create red lines, because I need to know that our marriage and our family life is not going to fall apart, because I do tend to get caught up in my little projects. And I needed to put those red lines immediately, me'lahatchila. And so we were trying to grapple for a good, catchy name for this organization. And we were calling all our funny advisors from NCSY to see if anyone had some good ideas. No one came up with anything. One night we were eating spaghetti and meatballs for dinner, and Avi's like, anywhere in it. I'm like, works for me, great. So we printed up some flyers, and the next day Avi went to a football game because he figured he'll see some Year in Israel kids over there. Passed out about 15 flyers, and the next day the phone started ringing, and it's about 15 years later and the phone is still ringing. And while the program has changed a lot, and I only wish that I could be giving you what we used to give the students, and I'll explain to you, and you'll figure out a little based on what I'm saying, why we had to switch it all to an online system where I'm basically not involved. I mean, I see everything going on, but I'm not proactively making the calls the way I used to be, Baruch Hashem, because of the growing family. We, it was, and it is, an amazing, amazing adventure. And we have seen Yad Hashem so upfront, and, you know, we can definitely fill books at this point with all of the different experiences that we had. We were basically placing about 150 students every Shabbos, and it was the whole gamut. It was those non-religious, totally secular, don't know what Shabbos is. They're like, can you set me up for the weekend on the beach? And, you know, should have been a little good Kira family over there, you know. All the way to those Me'asharim Hasidim, Mamish, and everything in between. So if you can just imagine the numbers and the amount of complexities and the wishy-washiness of, you know, students, and not their fault, but students change their plans, change their mind, we get sick, my mother dumb won't let me travel over there, and on and on and on. You know, just to give you a little glimpse, a little taste of what we were dealing with, you know, every single week, all the time, I remember, and I only learned of this story a few years ago after the fact, a couple girls wanted to go away to Male Adumim. So I said, great, no problem. I call our friends, the Ariels, in Male Adumim, and they're like, sure, send them over, no problem. So I tell the girls, okay, you're going to 34 Mitzvah Navo, have a great Shabbos, enjoy, they're awesome, great food. And so they show up, knock on the door, Ariel family, and she opens the door, welcome, come in. And they have a great Shabbos, and everything is wonderful. And then around Mincha time, you know, before Shalosh Shudis, Mrs. Ariel goes down to the park with her kids. And who should she meet in the park? The other Mrs. Ariel, who lives in the same building. And the girls went to the wrong Ariel family. And again, these girls don't even know that this happened. I mean, I didn't even know who these girls were. I tried looking them up in my old records. But basically, Mrs. Ariel, the wrong Mrs. Ariel, was like, great, come! Like, she just didn't want to embarrass them. She didn't even realize, you know, that there was any option over here. And poor Mrs. Ariel, who cooked the full Shabbos, is like wondering, like, oh, I'm going to kill that anywhere in Israel. They didn't show up, you know. That was one thing. And then there was Ayelet, the Chayelet. Ayelet was a secular Chayelet, and she walked into an internet cafe in Tachna Merkazit, and there were two Bravenders girls who were signing up on the Anywhere in Israel website. And she struck up a conversation with them, and she said, what is this? And they explained what the website does. So a couple minutes later, I get a call. Hello, I speak a little bit of English. You know, I'm Israeli. I'm not religious, but can you help me find some Shabbases? And I'm like, big calf, like, totally, this is fun. And so I started setting her up all over the place, and she was really a very special girl. And so she started really connecting to all these families. I could take off that one of the families walked her down the chuppah, and she's happily married, living on Yeshua with lots of kids, and she's good start from lady. And then there were the two Gushies. They had called me once, and they said, it's our last Shabbos in the Gush after being here for like 3 years. And both me and my friend are going back to Cooper Union. We both want to be actuaries. And we figured for our last Shabbos, maybe you could set us up by some actuaries in Israel so we could see what, you know, what we can dream about when we go back, and maybe we will make our life in Israel one day. I said, no problem. So I called actuaries that I know and tried making connections, and nothing was panning out. And I was so busy with all the other placements, you know, I kind of put them at the bottom of the list and took care of the girls who, like, really needed their information right now. And finally, it's Thursday night, and I'm getting nowhere with this actuary thing, and I call them. I'm like, guys, can we just ditch the actuary thing, and I'll just find you something else random? They're like, great, we trust you, awesome. So I looked at my whole list. Where have I not placed a lot of students this Shabbos? Who can I still bother Thursday night? And I realized I didn't have a lot of students in Modi'in, in Buchman, you know, in the city of Modi'in. So I said to myself, this will be easy. You know, I'll just put out an email to the community, like, who wants two Gushies, you know? And literally within 4 minutes, I got 10 responses, and they're like, we want it, we want it. So I pretty much randomly, I mean, I know the family's there, but I chose the four best families, one to sleep by, one for dinner, one for lunch, one for Shal Shudas. This way they'll have a whole lot. And Friday night at dinner, the hostess looks at this guy, and she says, you. I have the perfect girl for you. And now they're happily married, living on a Yeshu with a few kids. And that was pretty cool. Then there was Yad Hashem. Hashem just standing there doing this. Then there was dear Andrew Brown. I call up, hello, you know, anywhere in Israel. He's like, hi, this is Andrew Brown. I just got to Israel now. I have to admit, I want to just tell you straight out, I'm not religious, but what you might find interesting about me is that I speak 14 languages fluently. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, I used to, you know, pick a place on the map and spend my summers, and, you know, I would get a Meltzer job, you know, a waiter job, and I would pick up the language, and the guy's a genius, and he's good with languages. This is what he did. And he said, I happen to have a blog on languages, and I thought that now that I'm here in Israel, I'd spend my weekends practicing, keeping up with all my languages. Maybe you can give me some home hospitality using all my different languages. Like, this is fun, I love a good challenge. And so every Shabbos, I'd be setting this guy up, and I would try and get it and shtup in all the different languages. You know, Friday night by the Frenchies, and lunch by the Russians, and, you know, there was some Chinese in there. And he was loving it, we were loving it, and I finally invited him to us for Shabbos. Usually most people who were repeat customers ended up by us, you know, so I'd get to really check him out and see what I'm doing to these poor hosts, you know. And we love the guy. He shows up in jeans and, you know, leather jacket, and he's cool, and he was a riot. He was really awesome. And then we lost touch with him. It was about a year and a half, 2 years later, and it was an Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos, and I get this unexpected knock on the door. And I open the door, and there is the starkest, blackest, taddest person in front of me. He's like, I'm Ephraim. Rachel, remember Andrew? And thank you for this. And I'm like, oh my God. That was awesome. And today he's married to a Frenchie. He's speaking French all day, and he's living in Mea Shearim. Just an amazing guy. He will be in the Sanhedrin one day, that is for sure. He's in all those languages. Then there was the time that four Leif HaTorah guys asked for a hippie experience, so I sent them to Bat Ayin, and the best host said yes. This guy, Erez Levanon, he was an amazing breastfeed dude, and these guys really connected with him, and they were playing with the kids all Shabbos, and they really, it was like a great shidduch between these four guys. And then Sunday morning, Erez Levanon went off to the field in Bat Ayin to do some hispodidus, and he got stabbed by an Arab and killed. And I had to call these guys to say, you will not believe what just happened to Erez Levanon. And these guys were like totally heartbroken. I'm like, Levi is at 4 o'clock in Bat Ayin, you know. And they completely just took over the Shiva home. They took care of the kids the entire week. They got other Lave guys to come, and they raised money for this poor mother, and they got her on her feet again. And it was really lots and lots of Yad Vashem. Yad Hashem, not Yad Hashem. And, you know, it all sounds so glamorous and fun and wonderful, but we can also fill another book on all the horror stories. And oh my gosh, we're talking drugs and police cars and ambulances and lice and bed bugs and child abuse and general bias problems and, you know, many, many hosts who deeply resent me for sending me those very, very no good, very, very bad students. And lots of students calling me saying, like, we really appreciate what you did, but you have to hear what just happened to them. So what can we do? With the good comes the bad. It's all Yad Hashem. And basically, it really was out of our control to a certain degree. Like, I really do have lots of spies in every community who I check up on. I was constantly in contact with the, you know, the Aim of Bites and the Rosh Yeshivas and making sure, you know, is this person really stable? And, like, what's that program? And what's Aardvark? And what's this? And what that? You know, all these different things. And, but still, one girl cancels. She brings her friend, who's the wrong kind of friend, you know, for this kind of family. And the balagan is going to happen. Or conversely, you'll have, you know, a couple girls, one gets sick, and the replacement girl who came by mistake, who wasn't supposed to be there, ended up having the big turning point of her life and finding her, you know, internship that summer, and whatever it was. And so I just remember, you know, like a very typical mistake would be a guy who would sign up on the online system and he would want that hippie experience. He'd want to go to the Moshav Modi'in, Karlbach Moshav. And so he pressed Modi'in, and I remember he called me Saturday night. He ended up in Modi'in, you know, the fancy, you know, American community. He ended up in this mansion, ship of mansion, and he's like, where were the hippies? You know, I'm like, sorry, kid, you should have talked to me first. Don't just do it on your own. Anyway, and then there were times when I would have to try and box in my own mind. You know, I'd get these calls. This was before people were looking things up on Facebook, meaning I couldn't just check up a student as easily as I would be able to now. And I thought I got pretty good at trying to box in. You know, a girl says, hi, I'm from Teaneck, I'm learning Bravender. It's like, you can only imagine basically what that means. But then we'd get these guys, you know, especially the yeshivish ones, who, like, you know, I don't know every nuance of all the different issues. By now I do, like, I really do know what's this place and what's that place. But at a certain point, you know, this one guy calls, he's like, hi, this is Schwartz, you know, and I didn't know the name of his place, I didn't know what to expect. But they were coming to me for Shabbos, and there were gonna be five guys, and I just expected five yeshivish guys, and I look, Erev Shabbos, walking up my path, are five Hasidim, like mamish Hasidim. I'm like, Kashrus, ah, we should talk about this. I don't know. But it was a Hasidish tish at my table all Shabbos, and it was awesome. My kids loved it. It was great for everyone. And so, so as special as this whole tikufa was, there was one very important thing that, until today, and especially today, and every conversation I ever have with my husband, and any cheshbon and nefesh I'm ever doing with myself, is all going back to a pyramid of priorities, which we all have. Everyone has a certain type of pyramid, but my pyramid looks something like this. I'm at the top. I gotta take care of myself. I gotta take care of myself physically, that I eat properly, that I'm exercising, that I'm not becoming a shmata, that I'm getting enough sleep, because if I don't get enough sleep, I will be a shmata. That's important. Ruchniyistic-wise, also, I have to make sure. Am I at my, you know, Rabbi Schwat, Masilas Yisharim Shir, every Tuesday night at 8:30? Is my Yamima Mizrahi book on the Parsha right next to my, you know, breakfast nook so that instead of reading the cereal box, I'm reading her? Am I davening the way I'm supposed to be davening? Is that all in check? Once I'm okay, then I move on to the next item on the pyramid, which is marriage. Are me and Avi on the same page? Is the communication good? Are we going on our weekly dates? Are we growing together? Are things good and stable? And once I can give a V to that, so then it's the kiddies. And as you know, every child is a world into themselves. I mean, there's Tassi and Moshe and Aaron and Chen and Shuki and Shmuley and Sushi and Buni and blah, 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 and everybody. And I gotta make sure they're happy and they're not pulling at my skirt and whining and needing me and whatever it is. So for me, the next item on my list is chesed. I love giving, I love doing. Olam chesed yibana. I feel like I was put in this world to give to people and to do. But what happens when I'm on the phone and two girls want to go to Renana right now and little Sushi needs me? So who comes first? And what I had to learn is that by saying no to the two girls who wanted to go away, I was saying yes to Sara Menucha, who we call Sushi. And if marriage suffers, and if family life suffers, it's so not shaveh. I could be doing the most earth-shattering chesed in the entire world, but I'm accomplishing nothing. And what changed my whole perspective and my whole life on this one was a very important conversation I had with Rebbetzin Kellerman, Rabbi Kellerman's wife, the one who wrote Permission to Believe, Receive. She said, only I can be Rabbi Kellerman's wife. And only I can be the mother of my children. And I realized, yeah, there's no replacement. There's no replacement here. You know, even the times when I was like so like up to here with, you know, commitments, yes, sure, I'll get you this place, no problem, two over here, Herzliya, no problem, Tani, great beach, blah, blah, blah. All these things, as that was mounting up and the commitments were rising and rising, so it becomes harder and harder to say no. And once you become a yes person, it's like giving a dog a bone. he will come back for more. If you lend out your sweater in the dorm, so chances are the next day some girl's gonna be like, can I buy that shirt? Because they know that you're a yes person. And so we need to know our limits. And it's so easy to say, but it's so glamorous to do for other people and to be that yes person, but we have to take care of ourselves first. And we also, at the same time, have to know our own kochot. And I remember, before we started anywhere in Israel, I was looking for something nice to do, and I realized that, you know, with a birth rate in Kol HaVashachar of seven kids per family, at the average, you know, these ladies are always giving birth, and somebody needs to make them food after the birth. I know, like, from my own experience, without those week of meals afterwards, forget it. It's either going to be cereal for the kids every night, or, you know, you're busy, you're consumed, you're not feeling well. And so a friend and I started, you know, a nice organized list of getting people meals after the births, and it was running very nicely. And every time I'd be on the phone, like, hi, Mrs. Schwartz, can you make Mrs. Cohen a kugel over there for Shabbos? My husband would pass by, and he'd be like, don't rage, there's no one else in Kol HaVashachar who can make these calls and get Mrs. Cohen a potato kugel. And what he was saying is that, not to minimize what we were doing, because someone's got to do it, but there really would have been 60 or 70 other very capable women who could get that kugel. And he was saying, Rachel, look at what you can do that nobody else can do, and do it. And I remember back when I was about 12 or 13, I went to this reform camp, Tel Yehuda. And there was this fabulous girl in the bunk. She reminded me of you. It was cute, Gingy. And she was the most popular girl. And her thing at the ripe old age of 12 or 13 was hair and makeup. I mean, this girl really knew, and you, I see a cute little redhead over there. And she really knew how to, like, take somebody and, like, bring out the best in them. And we all had a sign-up sheet next to her bed, you know, 10-minute sign-up sheet for every Erev Shabbos, you know, to be dollied up, and then we'd have our pictures, you know, Erev Shabbos out on the grass, whatever. Last day of camp, it's banquet, and, of course, the sign-up sheets were much longer, 15-minute slots, and she was very much in demand that day. And we're all waiting around for Sherry. And no Sherry, where's Sherry? We had a page on the loudspeaker, come to bunk 42 right now, Sherry. And literally a few minutes before we all had to leave with our cameras to the banquet, who shows up in the bunk, and we're all just sitting there waiting, Sherry holding the hand of the camp, the bunk, Nebuch. What can I say, this girl was like so annoying and homely looking, and no one said two words to her the entire summer, and our jaws dropped because she made this girl so stunning and radiant, and wow, we lifted her that night at the dancing, and we took pictures of her, and we saw that she's even kind of a nice girl, and we misjudged her. And chaval that this happened the last night at camp, but there's no question that by Sherry using her kochot, she gave this girl the gift of going back to her hometown the next day and having a new way of looking at herself. Now, who knows where dear Sherry is today at the rate that they were going in that camp. She's probably married to a goy, but she definitely was taking her koach, what she's good at. It's that makom she'ein ish thing, when there's no one else who can do it, or if you're good at it, then go for it and do it. When I worked at Camp Hask, I was Mr. Khan's secretary. Like, I was totally not interested in pushing a wheelchair. That was really not for me. Couldn't understand all my crazy friends who were doing that. Now I very much understand it, and I probably could have used a few summers doing that just to do the Avodas Amidos thing. But I know that if you're not good at it, then your heart's not really into it. And if you are into it, and you're a meshuga bedavar, and you're going to do your thing, you're going to do it great. So basically, you know, an interesting thing happened. we didn't have kids for 4 years. And we were davening. We really wanted children. We didn't understand why we weren't having children. And in the meantime, it was still a very happy time. It was basically an extended honeymoon. I mean, we were, you know, working, I was working in McClellan Esther. We were packing it in with these girls and doing Shabbatons all the time. And I had an awesome partner, and we were having a great time and traveling and doing and this and that. And but we still really wanted this baby. And when Hashem finally blessed us 4 years later with this gorgeous little girl, little Dasi Doodles, who's now exactly your age, up and doing Kirov and Kiryat Ono, and Sherut Lumi, and she was a perfect little baby as far as babies go, but she actually cried. And there were times when I had people coming any minute for Shepherd Brothers, for this, for that, and she'd be squawking away, and I would not know what to do with myself. And I entered the stage of, oh my gosh, like, oy va voily, if I don't get my act together over here, because, I mean, she needs me. I think I'm supposed to be doing this right now, but I'm really not enjoying it. I would rather be in Sam helping girls and entertaining at a Shabbos table and not up, stored up, you know, cooped up in a room over there. Until I read Rabbi Nissel's Tefillah book, and I realized that the most important moments are those private moments in Klal Yisrael when Moshe Rabbeinu, he was up there on the mountain, just him and Hashem, and the most important things happen in Klal Yisrael in a private moment. And as I was doing this to baby Dasi at 4 in the morning and 5 in the morning and 6 in the morning, I realized this is very much what I need to be doing now. And that was a tekufa where I needed to very proactively get my act together. And I went to every Rebbetzin I could get my hands on, and I read every book that I could possibly do to read, to finally conclude that the most important contribution that I can possibly make in Klal Yisrael is producing Ovdei Hashem who are going to get out there and do good and bring or to the world, more important than the most earth-shattering chesed I could possibly come up with. This is what I need to be doing now. Now I absolutely love it, and even coming out here tonight is a difficult thing for me because I love being at home, and we try and be creative at home and give the kids a good chinuch and good solid, whatever we can at home. And I had to find a replacement for anywhere in Israel. Again, it's running now, it exists. If you want to go to Herzliya, just press the button and your request will go off to Mrs. Herzliya's, and hopefully you'll get yourselves placed without me. It won't be as good, but it will be fine, and there might be some balagans here and there, but basically every family on the list has my stamp of approval, so they should be good enough. It won't be, it will be a Shabbos with one family for the whole Shabbos, as opposed to before, where I tried to get you a little variety, but good enough. But I had to find something to do to fill my time, because there was still lots of time. So I couldn't be on the phone the way I used to, because I actually had to do something called homework with kids, and play rummy cue with them, and just chill out with them, and be a mom. And part of Shabbos placement means you really have to be on the phone all day and all night and catch different hosts at different times, and, you know, basically no end to what we were doing over there. But we basically had to come up with something that would be meaningful for all the kids. And I sat down with the kids and we tried to think of what we can do, what the Nadels could do together to make an impact where everybody would be involved. And we realized that on our yeshuv, there are so many smachot all the time in every Jewish community, but especially in a place where there's so many kids being born all the time. There are bar mitzvahs and sheva brachos and brises and askarot also. There's the whole magal of life, and it's happening right in front of our eyes. And people, we notice, tend to get very stressed out before these smachot. Certainly if you're making a Shabbos bar mitzvah or sheva brach and you have 100 people coming to Kochav HaShachar for Shabbos, you gotta find places for all these people, and not every hostess could commit. We used to welcome an entire shalom for women into the yeshuv for a Shabbaton until we got to the point where we realized it's really tough because hostesses really don't know what they're doing until Thursday night, and I cannot say yes to Rev Yamin having 80 girls if I really don't know where you're going to be able to sleep. That's why you're going to be staying in a nicer hotelish kind of thing. You're gonna love Shabbos, it's gonna be great. But when it comes to family simchas, you can't just say, oh, stay in Ahavat Chaim. You know, you need to be on the yeshuv, near the Beit HaKnesset, the whole thing. So we decided to help people with their simchas. The caterers in Kochav HaShachar only provide the food. They don't set up the ulam, they don't do desserts. They do the food thing. And we realized that people are very, they're just too busy with the logistics of getting their son ready for a bar mitzvah or getting their chasen kallah ready or whatever it is to deal with all those things. So we pack into the car a few times a week and we bring all of our albad and all of our, you know, equipment and we set up the ulams and we, you know, we help the people plan and I take care of all the Shabbos placement for their Shabboses, you know, just to take a little bit of the load off. And even my 7-year-old daughter can put a napkin in a cup, and even my little Effie Toodles can, you know, break a few things, and you know. But even they can help schlep the stuff, and we're having a great time with it, and it works for everybody because family first. And so, a bit about Kochav HaShachar. Got about 400 families, and 10% of the yeshuv is English speakers. So that means there's a good 40 families who are from America, a few Brits, and you know, South Africans and Australians, and the common denominator, I would say, of all the English speakers in Kochav HaShachar is that we all want it to be in an Israeli community. We're not looking to be with only Americans because we find that we all have enough baggage that we're bringing into the yeshuv. You know, we are inspired by the Israelis. We find that they're naturally on a higher level. They don't have the gashmiya stuff that we have, and they don't have the, you know, they really deal with life at a much earlier age. And they've been so welcoming to all of us. And I came in with, like, literally zero Hebrew. I'm like, shalom, ani Rachel. And after that, you lose me, you know. And they were just so, wow, kol hakavod, you left your family. That's amazing. So us 40 English-speaking families, as different as we all are, and we don't all necessarily look the same, and we are there's a variety, we are very, very connected to each other. And through thick and through thin, I mean, the whole community is really like that. We all know each other. We know the young couples. We know the older people. There is so much love and warmth and communal feeling that while we don't have a Starbucks right there, we have to go 15 minutes to our nearest, you know, cafe in Pisgat Zev. It's, and that's a reason why we don't get the new Nefesh B'Nefesh families making Aliyah. They don't come to Kochav HaShachar. Here and there are trickling. But it's not so simple to uproot from America and move to a Kochav HaShachar. You can't do that to your kids. It's too Israeli. So basically, you know, there was a period of time that many bad things were happening on our yeshuv. You know, in a very close time span, you know, someone got killed by an Arab, lady died of cancer, he got hit by a motorcycle and died, and one other thing. And we were like, oh my gosh, it was getting to be like dizzying. And so the yeshuv went to Rav Mordechai Eliyahu and they said, L'chvod HaRav, like, what do we do to end this curse in Kochav HaShachar? And he said, you need to do three things. You need to check, every family needs to check their tefillin and the mezuzahs. And sure enough, we were just floored. I mean, we ourselves had so much puzzle stuff. Avi's tefillin from his bar mitzvah was totally not good. One story after another, you're hearing about all of us families who had, you know, the mezuzah with the wrong this and the that. And he said, number two, you got to bring achdus to the community. And so that's, so Kochav HaShachar is now, they do so many wonderful, cute, you know, little secret admirer games, different, inviting people for different things. No end to all of the nice, sweet, achdusy things. And, you know, when you're in a place that's not transient, when you're in a place like Kochav HaShachar, where we've been for 23 years, and everyone like us has been also, here and there you'll have young couples who will leave in the summer. That's normal. You know, not everyone finds their place right away. But when you're there for so many years, that means that those little schnooks who used to be coming to my sukkah for a piece of candy are now jumping out of planes and running into Arab villages. And these are our boys. We happen to have 8 sons, and I know I'll be washing lots of army uniforms, Bezrat Hashem, and we'll be proud. But when you're part of a community, there's nothing like it. And it's we have a great time together. And you'll meet my friends, Bezrat Hashem, on Shabbos. They're looking forward to giving you a panel, and they're awesome, and they'll blow you away, and you'll love it. And again, I only wish we can have more of you. So really, in conclusion, there's a very, very special family in Kochav HaShachar. They're called the Pelleses. And the Pelleses made a bar mitzvah for their son. It was a great bar mitzvah, great family. And soon after the bar mitzvah, he was by the Ramada Hotel, and he was crossing over the highway. There was a Hafkana over there, and he got hit by a car, and he died. This was not even one of those things that was happening during that crazy tikufa. And, whoo, that was some levaya. That was not fun. And soon after that, just when you thought that the Pelleses had actually put this whole death of their son into perspective, their oldest prized daughter, Atara, with her husband and two kids, she made a left turn out of Kol HaVashachar, and she didn't see a truck coming, and it rammed her, and she died right on the spot. Now, the crazy thing is that Mr. Pelles, the Abba, saw his son getting killed because he was on the other side of the highway trying to catch up with him, and he was the next car to make the turn, and he saw Atara getting killed also. And my friend, who was in the front seat with Mr. Pelles when he saw Atara getting killed, she said, "You'd never heard such a scream of anguish in your life." It was like an eel story. It was horrible. And we happened to have had a pretty strong kesher with Atara and her husband and the two kids. Our kids were in the same gans together. Our two husbands played tennis together. We were always hoping this guy would get remarried. And sure enough, he got remarried to one of my friends, a Midmo girl of all people. And at that wedding, the whole Pelles family was there. There were very few people from the yeshuv who were invited. We were at the first wedding. So they, you know, they wanted to keep it kind of small. But we, because I was friends with both of them, we were there. And there were the Pelleses dancing up a storm with the grandchildren on the shoulders, the whole chasana, the whole time, sameach, sameach. And I pulled Shlomit, the mom, off to the side, and I'm like, "Shlomit, me'efo ha'koach shalach? Like, how are you even, like, doing this right now? This must be torture for you." And she said, and this was such a big Musar Haskel for me, she said, "Rachel, ze haya hachlata. It was a decision." And this lady basically runs her life with the decision to get up in the morning and to be great and to do great, and really to change the world. And, you know, it's all in our hands. Rabbi Kellerman once taught a point. He said, anything gashmi in this world is me'et Hashem. You know, how much parnasa we're going to make each year, what's going to happen to us physically, the bad that happens, all these things. But anything on a ruchani level is totally up to us. We can be as great as we want to be. And as the Rebbetzin of Darchei Bina, Rebbetzin Kurlan, says very often, she says, do you want your life to be punctuated with Torah or permeated with Torah? And now it's your chance. You guys are like, I really don't say this to everyone, you are in the best place in the entire world. You could not possibly have access to more great people. And time is limited. Before you know it, you'll be back there having to make all those wonderful life decisions, who to marry and what to do and where to live and all that stuff. And all those decisions are going to come from the decisions that you make right now and the commitments that you make now to your own Torah and Koveya Itim and all of that. And my bracha to you, and this was the bracha that I said a few nights ago with my kids, when we made you guys a little pre-Shabbos ruach, these little Shabbos chalis, we said, Hashem, please let this amazing group, who we've been hearing so much about, stretch themselves and extend themselves and give to Klal Yisrael. I can already see all the future imahos of Klal Yisrael with a few of these shmatas on your head a few years from now. You guys are shalavim. You're going to go out there and you're going to be the leaders, because it's just a known thing. We have very high expectations for you. And Hashem should bless you to have the knowledge to make the right decisions and to be able to go to the right guidance and to be able to do and give your fullest and change the world, Bezrat Hashem. So please come back. Come back to us for Shabbos and let's get to know each other more. Two gluten-free girls. Now I have two little gluten-free girls.